From the Midas of Roseburg Studio, KQEN weather, 50% chance of rain this afternoon. High was supposed to be 58. We've surpassed that already. 100% chance of rain tonight, down to 47. On Friday, 50% chance of showers, mainly in the morning. Rain coming back late in the afternoon, cloudy to high of 58. Friday night, 60% chance of rain, mainly late, down to 48. And for the weekend, 80% chance of rain on Saturday, 60% chance of rain on Sunday. As I said, warmer than expected, 61 degrees now. KQEN News Time, 12:35.
This is Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN. It's our daily in-depth look at people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. Inside Douglas County is presented by the Parent House. Now, Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Afternoon. Thanks for being here. Another check-in with one of our legislators, State Representative Cedric Hayden, joining us from the Northern Willamette Valley at the moment. Cedric, thanks for being on with us this afternoon.
Thank you, sir. I am out here at the rest stop between Portland and Eugene. We've been doing last week and a lot of meetings this week. Some of those are based out of Portland the last 2 days for me.
So let's back up and then go forward. We want to look both at legislative days and look ahead to the special session that begins January 3rd. I want to ask you, first off, one of the things that came up in one of our news stories today, and that is the question of limiting how much public officials can accept from people or firms that are seeking state contracts. There have been some questions about that. That's been in the news. There was the Supreme Court decision, of course, that made campaign finance regulations hard to come by back in 1997. Some other proposals have been out. But what we're hearing, and we want to ask you, is that lawmakers want to wait until after November when voters decide whether to amend the state's constitution to explicitly allow campaign finance limits. Has that been coming up in anything you've been involved with lately?
So I read probably the same article that you read this morning, and campaign finances is something that, I think we need to look at in Oregon, and there have been a few bills put forward out there that, you know, our courts have told us that constitutionally we can't do until we have a change. And so the argument is, you can, you know, do something with campaign finance, but if you don't change Oregon's constitution, then the courts will strike it down. So that's kind of the argument of, you know, what do and how do you approach campaign finance. Of course, it's a politically driven question, and we want to make sure that one side of the aisle wouldn't be disenfranchised. In some of the proposals that we've particularly seen, Dan Rayfield is our representative. Rayfield is the one that brings a lot of those forward, have been, you know, one-sided, that would hurt one side, but open up unlimited campaign funding from another side. So we got to make sure that we have balance with that.
And, a couple of years back, I think it was, maybe in 2018, there are some questions, just for instance, in the governor's campaign about some of the money coming in from organizations that had the potential to be make gains in their business through state government. That happens on both sides of the aisle, of course, depending on who's running, who's in office, and maybe what companies are wanting to see changes made or get state contracts, et cetera. It does seem, based on the Oregon Supreme Court decision in 1997, that at least as the Constitution is written now, that it's very tricky to make much of a change without making an amendment in the Constitution.
Well, I think, and that is one of the things that I believe the voter should vote on, and I think that I've been supportive of a constitution amendment that we can make some campaign finance. You know, I don't think that we can write laws that violate our constitution, because those won't work. But I do think that we should approach it to where we can get some changes in our campaign finance. I think that concept should go to the voters, and I believe that it will go to the voters. And so I've been supportive of that. You know, if you have a government contractor, and this plays a lot in healthcare. Also, you know, when we think of contracts, sometimes we just think of freeways and roads and things like that. But it also healthcare contracting. If you have, you know, government funded, state funded, federal and state dollars funded contractors, and they have unlimited ability to influence through campaign contribution, but it's all tax dollars. You know, there is a conflict of interest there inherently built into that. So I've been a supporter of, you know, somebody that that has said, we really need to look at this and we need to have an amendment to our Constitution so that we can put some parameters around that. But again, it can't be a one-sided thing.
Let's go back to legislative days. What was your thought about just some of the things that were discussed or maybe got accomplished during those few days?
So legislative days has come and gone. That was last week. And what we see in our committees that we sit on is we have different lawmakers or groups come in and represent some of the ideas that we will be seeing for the session. I just checked this morning the computer program called OLIS, and that's Oregon Information Legislative Systems, that has our bills on it. I think it was yesterday I got bill numbers assigned to my bills, and they aren't up on OLIS yet, so I can't go in and read all of my colleagues' bills. Those aren't, at least this morning, they weren't public yet, so that will help us. But within that, on the committees that I sit on, we had a lot of conversation about the cap and trade. I sit on a Ways and Means Committee on Natural Resources. The cap and trade concept will work its way through that committee. So there is talk and a lot of talk about that particular concept. Of course, you know, we had the senators walk out in the long session in 2019 over that. There is some talk about, well, you know, what difference, and there's been some proposed delays for a few years for rural Oregon. I have not seen that those delays are something that would improve the bill to where that we could get behind and support it. One of the things that was talked about in there is the there's a group that kind of grew out of that called Timber Unity. A lot of our constituents and folks from the, you know, timber industry are involved with that, particularly in Douglas County. And there's going to be a rally February 6th at the state capitol. So cap and trade, big conversation. I sit on healthcare committees. I sit on the policy healthcare committee in the House. And so a lot of conversations about coordinated care organizations, not so much the campaign finance conversation, but there is a bill that would require coordinated care organizations to release information that they have claimed proprietary or something that is a trade secret. The Oregon Health Authority has been frustrated by not being able to get some of the data, and this has to do with some of the pharmaceutical purchasing and whatnot. So that's going to be, you know, very technical, but interesting conversation going forward. Also on the mental health and behavioral, which we'll have a lot of conversations about addiction, how we deal with that. And I'm on the Ways and Means Human Services, which is the budgets for all of that.
What did you feel like the tone was as people begin to look at this short session? You have got a constitutional mandate of 35 days to get a lot of things done. Is there time to bring in some of these bigger subject matter pieces of legislation without derailing the process of getting everything else done?
So the feeling that I'm getting, at least in my committees, you know, an example of the long session, we had a couple of really controversial things, cap and trade and mandates on vaccinations. So for like an example, the mandate on vaccinations, from my understanding, that's not going to be coming forward. So I think when you boil it down to most of the legislation that I have seen so far, and I certainly haven't seen all of it, is kind of short session based technical adjustments. We've got some problems with the state hospital. We're talking about potentially opening a second and third wing in Junction City because we are basically in violation of some federal mandates with our state hospital. These are where people that we call them aid and assist, or people that have been through the court system that can't, aren't determined to be competent to serve in their own defense. They go to state hospital. We're 55 beds short on a waiting list on that. We've got to be able to do that within 7 days. So there is a lot of that kind of stuff that the short session is to work on. I think the big outlier on big policy that I've seen is the cap and trade bill.
Going to take a break on Inside Douglas County. More when we come back. State Representative Cedric Hayden with us. The interview podcast after one at 541radio.com. Inside Douglas County at 1245 from News Radio 1240 KQEN. Inside Douglas County, 1246, News Radio 1240, KQEN, Lars Larson Show coming at 1, KQEN Local Talk at 4. It's Northwest Wine Radio, Brian Calvert looking at wine, beer, and spirits from around the Pacific Northwest. On tomorrow's program, State Representative Gary Leaf will join us. We have State Representative Cedric Hayden on now, joining us from between Portland and Eugene, making his way back to his home after meetings that have been going on. Let's look ahead to this short session a bit more. Representative Hayden, you walk into a very quick time frame, and my understanding is, though you could come back in with a short session, this 35 days, there's no wiggle room in that. It's got to be no more than 35 days, and it could be 6 or 7 days a week.
Yeah, and so we have a very short time, and that's why, you know, when this was originally set out, this was for doing budget adjustments and things, figuring out how we can be compliant and have the funds that have been set aside for different departments. And it really hasn't, 35 days is not designed for big concepts like the cap and trade. So, you know, I come from the opinion that we shouldn't be doing those big type of complicated policy issues because the general public doesn't have time to come in and testify and weigh in on that like I think they should, meaning that we have, like I was just talking with my chairs on some of the healthcare stuff, and we have, they think, a little over 20 bills that we are going to have two 4-hour meetings to make a decision whether those bills move forward or not. And that's a lot. I mean, that's only two opportunities that they could open it up for public opinion. You're literally, if you time that out, you're just talking about 15, 20 minutes per bill. And so you don't have time for public engagement for controversial stuff in there. And so that's a concern for me.
And the governor, though, has made it pretty clear that she wants to move forward with cap and trade in some form in this session. How do you think that's going to go?
Well, I think it's going to be controversial, and we will see. I don't have a crystal ball. I don't know. I know that there have been some delayed offers to not engage with rural Oregon, although the cap and trade thing is kind of based on an auction to sell off these carbon credits. And I know that California and Canada have kind of joined that concept. And they've said, you know, if there's any delays that, you know, Oregon wouldn't be a part of that. So it would be a whole different kind of concept. So very complicated. Don't think we should be doing it in the short session. And I cannot tell you where it's going to go.
So for you, what about legislation that you are working on for the short session?
So a couple of things in the short session that I am working on, and I've had this bill before, and I'm going to bring it back again. And this is a House resolution, which means it is a request by the legislature to refer it to voters to have a say on it. I did it in 2019. It didn't get a hearing. I'm hoping to get a hearing on it. And this is something that is a reaction to constituents, particularly not just my district, but across the state, seniors and housing, and the ability for seniors, particularly on a fixed income, to stay in their house. We get contacted a lot by constituents in the district that I represent that the tax increases are driving them literally out of their homes because they're on a fixed Social Security income, and they can't do that. And so this would allow seniors to apply for and not eliminate their tax, but keep it from going up so it doesn't outpace them and get them out of their house. So that's one bill. Another one is a technical one that I work a lot. It's just got the bill number today, House Bill 4127, which is an integration of oral health into our system and getting kids more ingrained with preventative oral health services, which is an area I work in a lot. Not really exciting, but good stuff.
What about the number of bills that are allowed to come in overall in the session? Is it too many?
So I would like to see the House adopt the rules of the Senate. The Senate is one bill per senator, so you've got the 30 there, and then on the House side, we've got 60 members, and we get two, and so that's 120, and then every committee, and I haven't gone through, and not all the committees meet here during the short session or have bills, but I don't remember the count. I think it's like 17 or 20 committees that get three bills apiece, and then the governor can get five bills. So if you add that up, you know, it's several hundred bills that will be coming through.
And is that too many for a 35-day meeting period?
Well, I think so. I would like to limit committee bills to one and each of the lawmakers one bill.
Now, looking ahead, an election year, obviously, presidential on down, state representatives reelected every 2 years, so that involves you. Are around the state, from the House side, are folks still being talked to about running as or considering being candidates, especially from your connections in the GOP?
Yeah, and so switching to you know, just real quick, I wanted to touch on a couple of things. We've got the Oregon census coming up, which is kind of tied in, which if those numbers come in where we think we will, there'll be a sixth congressional seat, which the way things are made up could affect the Douglas County area. We've got the kicker tax of $1.6 billion coming back from 2018 taxes and a new committee on wildfire. Switching to GOP, as you're aware, we've talked a couple of times here, we did have a change in the GOP leadership. I am one of the assistance to that leadership. So I'm on the phone calls. We have two phone calls a week, and so I'm a little more engaged with that than I have in the past. And we are actively out recruiting. I have worked with three candidates successfully. Two have filed and one is on the verge. Actually four candidates in Lane County or touch Lane County. And so, you know, that's an area that has been difficult. I am the only elected Republican to a partisan position in Lane County. Of course, I represent Douglas County also, which has a lot more colleagues, Republican colleagues there. So we are working. We have taken, the leadership has taken the representatives and kind of split us up and given target areas to five or six of us that are concentrating on that. And we're making some grounds and we hope it's successful.
Is it a tough sell, though, to try to encourage somebody to run when the Democrats dominate the state, and especially if they're in a district that is more, or historically at least, likely to go Democratic, making it even tougher for a Republican?
It is a very difficult thing. It's a tough sell, and it's a tough sell because of kind of the makeup of it, the reimbursement. Although because of the pay equity that Oregon adopted here a couple sessions ago, our pay increased a little bit. I think we get about $2,100 a month. I'm not sure what that exactly is after you pay taxes, take a little retirement out of it, but a little under $30,000 a year for that. And so if you have a family, that's a pretty tough It actually, if you had three kids, that's about equivalent to the federal poverty level at 100%. So you can't do very well in supporting a family. So we go to recruit people, and it's really hard to recruit working age family members to do that. And that's a complication. So yes, it's hard to recruit. And in districts that are upside down, like most of the ones are in Lane County that I've been to assigned to recruit on, it's difficult, but we keep trying.
You brought up something interesting about the potential for a sixth congressional seat. Explain real quickly the process, if that happens, of determining how to redraw the boundaries.
So the boundaries are basically drawn in Oregon by the legislature and then decided if it's not something that the legislature, and you can imagine they won't come up with something that is kumbaya, everybody agrees to. Basically goes on to the Secretary of State. So the Secretary of State position under census year is very important, and how those districts might be drawn, not just for the sixth congressional district, but also they we call it gerrymandering. They reconfigure based on populations. The idea is that like communities should be put into a district that is represented where people of like communities can elect one person, meaning they don't typically connect coastal communities, with more inland communities, although we do see that happen. And so Secretary of State is a very important position, and that is one that, although I'm not involved in recruiting for that, we on the Republican side are in need of somebody to step up for that position.
And real quick, with the growth mainly being in the Willamette Valley and the Portland area, is it possible that, for instance, the northern boundary of the 4th District could get pushed south a ways if a 6th seat was added?
It's absolutely possible. I mean, the possibilities are unlimited. Again, they are supposed to kind of combine like communities, and depending on what the population is on the other side of the Cascades, Walden's district now comes over into the southern Oregon to some extent there. And so if there's enough population, I assume that would be moved back, and then Peter DeFazio's district would probably take up some of that, and the northern part of DeFazio's district would probably become that extra district. But that is just total, from looking at the map, that seems to make sense, but I have no idea.
All right, State Representative Cedric Hayden, thanks for joining us this afternoon.
All right, thank you, sir.
All right, 1258. Inside Douglas County, News Radio 1240, KQEN.
You've been listening to Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240, KQEN. A daily look at the people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. Inside Douglas County is presented by The Parent House. The show will be available as a podcast in just a few minutes at 541radio.com. So share it and let others who weren't listening live know about today's show. Inside Douglas County is a public affairs presentation of Brook Communications. Your home for Douglas County's news team. News Radio 1240 KQEN.